Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. About 9 years ago, Baltimore native Matthew Van Dyke bought a motorcycle and a video camera and traveled across North Africa and the Middle East. During the trip, he struck up a friendship with a Libyan man named Nuri, and when revolution broke out in his new friend's country, Van Dyke joined the rebel fighters and documented the war against Muammar Gaddafi. He had a gun in one hand and a camera in the other. He was captured by Gaddafi's forces, spent more than 5 months in solitary confinement. Van Dyke's story is the subject of filmmaker Marshall Curry's documentary Point and Shoot, which airs on Monday on SDPB-TV. In late 2012, Van Dyke was in Syria during the Battle of Aleppo and produced a short documentary of his own about the resistance movement there, Not Anymore, a story of revolution. Now Van Dyke has helped form the Sons of Liberty International to help the Syrian Christians in northern Iraq fight ISIS. He joins us on the line from New York. And Matthew Van Dyke, thanks for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you for having me.
How often are you here in the U.S. These days?
Back and forth. I've been to Iraq twice this year. Right now I would be there actually, except I'm waiting on one of the militias we're helping to be ready for us to come over. But probably starting in October, I'll be spending much of the rest of the year in Iraq.
Well, I'd like to start out talking about the documentary. It's been out for a number of months. It'll be on SDPB-TV next week. How accurate do you see Point and Shoot? How accurate do you see this documentary in portraying your life and experiences in the Middle East?
Not nearly as accurate as I would have hoped. The story shown in the film is really Marshall Curry's version of my story or his interpretation of it. There's some things in it that Marshall wanted me to say, scripted lines, some other things that I disagree with, but you know, I mean, it's made people like it. They get the gist of the story. People have been, I've gotten positive feedback from it, but definitely Marshall and I have some differences, and there are some things that bother me about the film. But, yeah, I mean, I still encourage people to see it and form their own opinions.
What are some of the things in particular that bother you about the film?
There were some instances where Marshall would take audio from one section and moved it to another. For example, my girlfriend in the film is asked in the film how she felt when I went back to the front line to fight after I escaped prison. And Marshall had taken some audio about how she felt when I was missing in prison and inserted it there. So thereby making it look like, making her look stupid and me look like a jerk for going back to the front line was the end result of that audio move. And some scripted lines, things that he wanted me to say. I've kind of kept quiet about all of it for quite a while, but we'll see in the future. My main thing is I don't want people to have their experience of the film ruined, because I've gotten comments from people who also have obsessive compulsive disorder like I do, who've been inspired by the film to get out and not let that stop them in pursuing their dreams, and people who've been inspired to go out on journeys of their own. So I don't want the behind the scenes to take away from that, but the process of making this film, since I returned from filming it, has been quite difficult, quite stressful, and a bit disappointing.
In watching the film Point and Shoot, it seems that the moment when you meet Nuri from Libya is what changed everything for you. That's when it seems like you got more involved with the situation in the Middle East, weren't just an observer. Is that what happened with you?
Yeah, I mean, I'd made a number of friends in Libya. My travels took me there in 2008. I spent about a month and a half in Tripoli, mostly hanging out with Libyan bikers and some other Libyan friends. But it was really the personal connections that I'd made with Libyans that compelled me to join the revolution and help fight for their freedom. And my friendship with Nuri became very important. I'd known Nuri for 4 years, actually, because I met him in 2007, 4 years before that conflict started, and fought in the war with him, and he's really one of the central characters, you could say, in the film and in the story. He's a wonderful guy, an actual Libyan hippie before the war. He became a soldier during the war, and now he's actually back to more of his hippie traveling ways now that the war's over.
So the two of you are still in contact?
Yes, yeah.
Now, you spent, as you mentioned, nearly 6 months in prison after being captured by Gaddafi's forces. How did that experience change you?
You know, it was a lot of time of self-reflection and thinking about my past, present, and future. It was a very difficult time. You know, I was at the beginning in a cell that was about 7 foot by 4 foot, nothing to do but stare at the wall. Eventually, I was moved to a slightly larger cell, but still, I would just pace back and forth in my cell and think for nearly 6 months. I became a bit more religious over time. Your only conversations are really through prayer, and you get religion real quick in prison. So it changed me in various ways, but I actually, fortunately, haven't had any long-term effects of it. And was able to get right back into the fight after escaping from prison.
And how did you manage to escape?
Well, one day prisoners were escaping from the prison and broke the lock off my cell and ran from prison.
And you went back, as you mentioned, fighting with the Libyan rebels, including your friend Nuri. What happened after that? Sort of take us to the time after the film Point and Shoot ends.
Well, in 2012, I went to Syria. I became involved in the Syrian revolution. I had intended to fight in Syria as well, but the Syrian rebels lacked weapons and ammunition, so I decided to make a film to try to help build their international support. So I went and I made a film called Not Anymore, Story of Revolution, that I later released on YouTube for free so people can see it. If they just want to search for Syria film on YouTube, it should be the first thing that comes up. That film was also shown on TV in a few countries and won over 100 awards. And it gives really an opportunity to these two Syrians, a Syrian female journalist and a male rebel fighter, speaking about why they have a revolution, their experiences. And it's a 15-minute short documentary, high on emotion. And I encourage people to see it and learn about that revolution. And then in 2014, towards the end of 2014, I returned to Iraq, where I had spent quite a bit of time over the years during my travels, and started Sons of Liberty International, which is a company that operates on nonprofit principles. We offer free military consulting, advising, training, and some supplying to Christian forces in Iraq that are fighting against ISIS. I started this because I was friends with James Foley and Stephen Sotloff, two of the journalists that were beheaded by ISIS. And actually, tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of James's death. So I started this to have some effect on the conflict against ISIS. And I bring in U.S. military veterans to do the training. And we recently did leadership training for one of the units, or the former West Point instructor. And so that's really the cause of my life now.
Now, the Sons of Liberty, is this a fighting unit or a protection unit? How would you describe this group?
It's sort of a pro bono military contracting or security contracting firm. We function entirely off of contributions from the public. So people go to the website at sonsoflibertyinternational.com. They make a contribution. And that money goes towards us providing entirely free services to Christians fighting against ISIS in Iraq, and hopefully we'll expand to other countries in the fight against ISIS and against other terrorists and insurgents around the world. So it's really an opportunity. We're trying to create a movement for people to be able to donate a little money and have a tangible effect in the fight against ISIS and in helping communities defend themselves against terrorist insurgents and in their efforts to expand liberty worldwide.
So are you working with other groups? Are you cooperating with other groups in this organization, Sons of Liberty, in fighting ISIS?
We do from time to time. Primarily what we do is we work with local forces. So we're looking for long-term sustainable solutions to security problems. So we're working with a Christian militia called the Nineveh Plain Protection Unit. We trained over 330 of their men. It costs us less than $50,000 to do that compared to the U.S. government spending their $250 million program in Syria that's trained 50 to 60 Syrian rebels. So you can see the benefits of doing this the private sector way. But right now we're in a training consulting phase. We will provide frontline combat advisors embedded with units when they go to fight ISIS. We'll soon start working with a second Christian militia. Our work with the first is completed. And then hopefully they'll participate in the fight against ISIS, and then we'll expand to other countries as well.
Is there any cooperation at all with the U.S.?
We're open to cooperation. There hasn't been any direct. We've had discussions with State Department who are on the ground in Erbil, Iraq. We're funded by the private sector, by everyday people giving contribution from actually 20 different countries around the world, but most of them are Americans who contribute. So we're trying to function independent of government. We're willing to cooperate. We like the U.S. government, obviously. Our trainers are U.S. military veterans, but we don't rely on government funding. We don't take orders or direction, but we're open to cooperation with the government and the furtherance of the fight against ISIS, of course.
Is this a legal operation at all? I'm wondering about the necessity of having the cooperation, the approval of the U.S. government to do something like this.
Yes, we're registered with the U.S. government as a security contracting firm. Even though we operate on a nonprofit principle, the nonprofit model, we are registered as a security firm, and everything is legal.
Now, looking at the work that you're doing there with Sons of Liberty International, you work in Syria, fighting with the rebels in Libya. What is driving your commitment to the Middle East and being a part of these causes?
Well, it's not just the Middle East, but primarily the Middle East, because that's what my educational background and my experiences are in. But really, it's the pursuit of liberty. I believe that the only thing that separates myself from a Syrian or a Libyan or an Iraqi really is that people got on this planet before me and drew lines on a map. And really, we are all on this planet together. There are certain universal rights that people have, and liberty is one of them. I've seen the oppression. I've seen the effect of authoritarianism throughout that region during all my years there. I've seen how it breaks down communities and makes people not feel invested in their own future, which is a large cause of the problems in that region. And I believe everybody has a right to liberty, and I believe that we have a responsibility to sort of pass the torch to others and to assist people. There's no reason why in the 21st century a large portion of the population of this planet lives under medieval forms of government, or worse. If we can travel the moon and get moon rocks, we can certainly help some people live better lives and have liberty and democracy and be in charge of their own futures and choose their own destiny through electing their own leaders. But government efforts I've seen over the years have not been particularly successful in doing this, or with a lot of consequence and blowback. So I believe that giving local people the ability to liberate themselves is the best course of action, which is really what Sons of Liberty International is trying to help do.
So how long do you think you'll still be working in Iraq, going back and forth between New York and Erbil?
For Iraq, as long as the fight against ISIS continues, which will likely be several years. But we're also looking to expand to other countries. We've had people in the Philippines contact us wanting support, Libyans as well, even though there's no Christians in Libya. But we're not a religious group. We'll help anybody if they meet certain criteria. But we've had Libyans contact us for helping the fight against ISIS. People in Nigeria want to help against Boko Haram and helping villages to defend themselves against Boko Haram. Pakistan as well. So there's plenty of places that have requested support. Our limitation is really just the funding. We've relied so far entirely on small contributors. We don't have any mega donors. We are going to launch, hopefully soon, a couple products to try to help funding. But we really work hard to be able to provide our services for free to people that otherwise could never afford them, and to give them a real professional service. But that requires fundraising, and that's really our only limitation right now.
So that's what you mostly do when you're back here in the U.S. is fundraising.
That and administrative tasks. We've kept our staff in the U.S. very small, to really just a couple people, with the idea of reserving as much of the funding as possible to be able to do our work overseas. Some of these Christian militias have very little money. Very little equipment. And we really, especially with the one that we're looking at working with next, really have to sponsor them from the ground up, including possibly paying some of the men's salaries so they can support their families while they do this. So it's really a cost intensive, but again, for less than $50,000, we trained a battalion of 330 in the U.S. government, has a $250 million program in Syria and has trained about 50. So we're doing a cost-effective job, and we have a lot of U.S. military veterans who volunteer their time. We've had over 500 applicants. Some of them are former special forces. Some of them are recently retired, fairly high-ranking U.S. military officers. And a lot of good people outside the military who volunteer their time and services to help us. Our current acceptance rate on trainers, though, is between 1% and 3%. We really only take the best of the best, and they're all volunteers, and some of them are giving up. Our lead trainer makes $500 a day as a military contractor where he works in Iraq. With us, he volunteers for free, but he's willing to do it because he believes in the cause, too. So we have a lot of great people in our organization, and we hope to keep growing.
Well, Matthew Van Dyke, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's Matthew Van Dyke. He helped form the Sons of Liberty International to help Syrian Christians in northern Iraq fight ISIS. He's also the subject of filmmaker Marshall Curry's documentary Point and Shoot. It airs on SDPB-TV Monday at 9 Central, 8 Mountain, and we'll talk with the filmmaker about the documentary on Thursday.